Time magazine. In 2011, The Guardian listed her among top 100 women activists and campaigners. And that does it for our broadcast. By the way, to keep you updated, Herman Wallace remains alive, one of the Angola Three. His conviction was just overturned. He left prison on Tuesday and remains in a New Orleans hospital, dying of advanced liver cancer. You can go to our website for more details at democracynow.org. Democracy Now! Has two job openings, Linux systems administrator and an annual giving manager. Go to our website, democracynow.org, for more. Democracy Now! Produced by Mike Burke, Renee Feltz, Aaron Mate, Nirmin Sheikh, Steve Martinez, Sam Alkoff, Hani Masood, Rabbi Karen, Dina Guzder, Amy Littlefield. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, where the time is now 8:01. Coming up next is Voices from the Edge with host Joanne Hardesty. Today's guest is Oregon State Senator Jackie Dingfelder. We'll talk about the legislative wrap-up, and we'll cover the federal government shutdown. We might get a surprise phone call from Sabrina Fulton, who is the late Trayvon Martin's mother, and she'll be in town soon.
Where is your radio dial on Thursday afternoons from noon until 2? 90.7 FM is the place to be. Twice a month, DJ Charlie presents the World Beat Connection with the hottest Afro-Caribbean sounds in Portland radio land. Reggae, salsa, soca, New Orleans Afro-funk, Haitian compa and rara, and Antillean zouk share the airwaves with African highlife. Afrobeat, Congolese soukous, Malian blues, juju, and South African kwaito, among the other great styles. Traditional and modern expressions are all included. On alternate weeks, check out Top Rankin Reggae and Dancehall with Shocks of Sheba show, hosted by Teresa and Michelle. Any week, Thursdays at noon is sure to move ya.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor two talks by Nicole Foss. Wednesday, October 9th, at 7 p.m., she'll speak at the First Congregational Church in Corvallis, 4515 Southwest West Hills Road. And Thursday, October 10th at 7 p.m., she'll be at Tabor Space on Southeast 55th and Belmont in Portland. Nicole Foss, writer and editor for theautomaticearth.org, is a big picture thinker and tours the world talking about environmental degradation and how we, as a community, can prepare ourselves and our neighbors for these realities. Nicole devotes a big chunk of her talks to practical suggestions for changes that people can make right now. That's Nicole Foss speaking October 9th at the First Congregational Church in Corvallis and October 10th at Tabor Space in Portland. More information can be found on the right-hand side of kboo.fm under Community Events.
KBOO's fall membership drive starts on the 10th, and you could help make reaching our fundraising goal a little easier by offering a matching donation of at least $500 for us to use on air during the drive. Matching money is a really great motivator to entice our non-contributing listeners to donate, so please email membership at kboo.org if you would like to sign up or have any questions. Or just call 503-231-8032 and ask for the membership department to plan your fall drive matching gift today.
Get up, stand up, stand up for your right. Get up, stand up, stand up for your right.
Good morning, good morning. I'm Joanne Hardesty, and welcome to Voices from the Edge. Yesterday concluded Oregon's legislative special session convened by Governor Kitzhaber on Monday of this week. The governor said that he had five bills and either all five bills passed or he would veto the other bills. So we're going to spend some time this morning talking to State Senator Jackie Dingfelder to get her take on the session. And we also want to get your take on the session. Clearly, people are divided on whether or not this was good for Oregon or not. Let me welcome to the studio Senator Jackie Dingfelder. Good morning, Senator. Welcome.
Good Good morning, Joanne. Thank you for inviting me on the show today.
And thank you for being here. I know you might be a little tired after your whirlwind legislative session.
Well, we actually finished about 5 o'clock last night, so it was Didn't go too late.
Not too bad. So was this legislative session a success from your perspective and your constituents' perspective?
From my perspective, I would say no. I was one of the few legislators to vote no on the package, the majority of the package. There were several House members and a few people in the Senate that voted no, including myself.
Well, I noticed that there were very few no votes. I am happy to hear that you were a no vote, and I'm going to go through the bills individually, and you can tell me what your position was on those bills.
So, well, Joanne, before we get started, though, I just want to make clear for people that a lot of people don't know, but the Oregon legislature now meets on an annual basis. Although we are a part-time legislature, we make about $21,000 a year as state legislators, very different from Congress. And special sessions are usually called when there's an emergency or a budget issue comes up. And so several of us questioned the need for engaging in this in the first place. What was the need for a special session? And in my mind, there was not the amount of deliberation that was needed for these bills. So I just wanted to put that out there before you go into detail in the different parts of the legislation.
Well, I appreciate that, and you may want to remind the listeners that this is the second special session that has given away huge tax breaks, but that's just my own commentary. So so let's get to the bills, right? So the governor was going around the state, this is about the kids, this is about the kids, this is about putting money into the classroom. So two bills cut costs to the public employees' retirement system, mostly by reducing cost of living adjustments to retirees. So does that mean retirees of the public employee retirement system are going to lose $4.6 billion?
Overall, yes. The bills, that they reduce the cost of living adjustment, otherwise known as COLA, for state retirees. Now, one thing I want to state up front, Joanne, is I did vote for the PERS bill, Senate Bill 822, in the regular session. And that, I felt, was a reasonable adjustment. However, for the special session, one of the PERS bills, there was two PERS bills. One was a policy bill, and one was a bill to adjust, take additional COLA money from retirees. And even though it was supported Senate Bill 822 in the regular session, I question the wisdom of trying to further reduce retirees' income. And we don't know if any of these bills are going to hold up in court, by the way, because there is going to be a court challenge. So I would say that that's true. Many people said, you know, part of the cause for the loss of PERS reserves was because of the Wall Street debacle in 2008, and why are we now punishing PERS employees for that?
Well, and then, so let's get to the tax break bill. And do you have that bill number?
Yes, that was House Bill 3601, and I was the only Democrat that stood up on the floor and debated against the bill. I carefully analyzed the bill and heard overwhelmingly from my constituents that there was concern about the bill, particularly because of tax breaks for individuals owning certain businesses. There were many aspects to the bill. There were some good parts to the bill, the part that I thought probably had the most merit. Well, two parts. One was to rein in the senior medical deduction, which is, we're the only state in the nation that has this, and it is not means-tested, and so that was contained in the bill. There was also an increase for the earned income tax credit, which I'm sure you know is one of the few things that we do for low-income Oregonians to put money directly back into their pockets.
Right.
However, a big chunk of the bill, and the largest portion of the bill, was a tax break for S-corps, for certain quote-unquote small businesses.
Right.
But in essence, when I analyzed it, when you look at how much money is going to be given away in the long term, it outweighed the benefit of the package. The amount in the by the third biennium was going to be $50 million a year, and after that, we're not really sure because there was no sunset on it or any way to completely rein it in. So the question I had is, how many jobs would this policy actually create and at what cost? And if we're truly interested in job creation, why don't we invest this money directly into education or infrastructure, and instead of giving it back to wealthy individuals and buying into a flawed trickle-down economic theory?
Well, and at some point, I mean, when this governor took office again, he talked about doing comprehensive tax reform, yet we have had two special sessions where we've worked out sweetheart deals on taxes with specific business components of the state economy, which means that when or if he ever gets to tax reform, we've taken a lot off the table already, which sounds really, which is extremely frustrating.
Yes, I think many people brought up the issue of comprehensive tax reform, and obviously I can't speak to the governor. You'll have to invite him on your show and ask him to respond to that directly.
I will.
However, I know that there's concern about, you know, how do we get to comprehensive tax reform if, you know, we've already, like you said, taken off some of the business components. We already know under previous tax measures, Measure 5 in particular, the burden for funding public services has already been shifted from businesses to individuals. And if anything, I think this continues in that trend.
And so the one of the big bills that I know KBOO listeners are really concerned about is this ban on counties other than Jackson County, which already has a ban on genetically modified agriculture. The governor has made a commitment that by June of 2014, he will have some certified smart people panel come up with recommendations for the 2015 session. Was there anything in this bill that actually compels the governor to keep that promise?
There was, my understanding is there was a letter accompanying the bill. I did not support the bill, and actually the majority of Democrats did not support the bill. The interesting thing is this bill passed, I believe, with either only two or three Democratic votes on the Senate side. So this was a bill that was a bargaining chip for the Republicans, and obviously I didn't support the bill. Didn't support it. I voted no on it during the regular session as well. And yes, the environmental community was very upset about this. My understanding is that they met with the governor, and the agreement was, as you already mentioned, that there would be a work group and then discussions in the 2015 session. And let me just be clear, Joanne. I think one of the things that was most disturbing to many of us is that, you know, we understood that we were being called back into special session to discuss PERS and revenue.
Right.
And then this policy bill came up out of nowhere, and you can guess why. You know, they were trying to try to get some Republican votes, and this is something the Republicans really wanted. It's part of a national agenda of a group called ALEC to try to stop any type of legislation on GMOs. You're probably following what's happening in Washington right now.
Yes.
Huge battle. Millions of dollars are going to be spent there. And so this was an attempt to preempt any type of legislation in Oregon. And what was, I think, very disturbing is that there was an amendment made to add an emergency clause. Now, Joe, and you understand what that means.
Right.
Emergency clause was added to prevent a referral. So it would make it harder to repeal this bill.
And so I have to ask the question. Again, the governor called this session because it was about the kids. It was about putting money back in the classroom. And then as we review the bills, There is some money that goes back into the classroom initially, but there doesn't appear to be any way to sustain the new money that's going to go back into the classroom, especially when the source for that money is going to be the reduction of taxes for businesses.
Correct. That was my assessment, and that's why, as I stated on the floor, I carefully analyzed the package, and even though the package realized some short-term benefits, but the question I raised is what cost to the long-term revenue to support education and important state services. The winners for that bill was wealthy business owners, and besides the small and diminishing revenue gain, what I found particularly troubling is the failure of the package to realize equal and fair benefits to low-income Oregonians and to sustain that revenue source over time. So, yes, for this next biennium, there will be an infusion of money into the classroom, and then after that, it's pretty much going down, and the growth of the business tax cut grows exponentially. And that's I know that there were many Democrats in the House that stood up, Representative Lou Frederick and Jules Bailey, Fred Barton, and spoke about this. Many of us felt this was the most egregious part of the bill.
First, I want to thank you and those legislators that you mentioned that actually stood up for working Oregonians, retirees, seniors. For me, it sounds pretty appalling that the governor would call a special session and then sell it as if it's all about the kids. And in reality, what it is because he wanted this PERS fix, he was willing to sell out the general fund in order to get what he thinks is a appropriate PERS fix and to be able to say he put more money into public education. But if you can't put it in the front end and then have it leaking out of the back end because you've cut money from people in the community. Well, I appreciate your willingness to stand up. Why is it so hard for politicians to stand up to the governor or to any stupid legislation and not just vote no? I mean, if it doesn't pass the smell test, why did legislators vote for this package?
Diane, I can't speak for other legislators. I can only, obviously, speak to my own actions. And I was elected by my constituents to stand up for progressive values and what I believe and what they believe are fair and equitable issues for moving our community forward, for funding our schools, health care, protecting the environment, and making sure that we have, an economically viable economy for all Oregonians, not just certain individuals.
And it doesn't sound like that either of our special sessions got us any closer to equality as far as taxes and who pays taxes and who benefits from the public infrastructure. Again, we have a caller on the line, and if you'd like to join the conversation, you could give us a call at 503-231-8187. Good morning, Brian. Welcome
to
KBOO.
And good morning. How's everybody today?
Frustrated.
Well, I know. I am too. I'm really frustrated. And I just want to say something, Joanne. You pretty much covered all my questions, but I think it comes down to this point. And I really don't want to be offensive at all. But I mean, when you sit back and look at this, and all the money that's being misspent in Oregon, and we're probably one of the most conscious spending states in the union, but we are paying out huge amounts of just the Portland police by themselves to fence off parks, to settle with people that have been abused, and you can just go on and on. There's still the projection of 40 kids to a classroom, and to even consider giving these big businesses and businesses in Portland a tax break is just insane.
Yes.
I mean, and I really have to say this to this person. I'm sorry. I
Senator Dingfelder.
Senator, you guys collectively should be ashamed of yourself. I mean, you are not running our state and our, you know, our society. This is our society. You're not running it correctly. And you know, I know you're innocent here, or you wouldn't be on KBOO under the light. But I mean, you know, I'll tell you what. If I was in your place, I would be telling my colleagues and my governor, you should be ashamed of yourself. I mean, just totally ashamed of getting in this game of giving tax breaks to big companies who are turning around and financing, you know, all kinds of crazy stuff with Alec and, you know, all these other, you know, the Koch brothers and all this stuff. You should just absolutely be ashamed of yourself. And you're taking money out of people's pocket who, you know, are just making a basic living off of their retirement, you know, and they should be, and they were promised that money. You know, they were promised it and they earned it. And, you know, you guys set it up to start with. But, you know, instead of me.
Can I just say something? I'm just going to say,
okay.
I appreciate your comments and certainly understand your frustration, but I'm going to say I'm not ashamed of myself because I stood up for what I believe is right, and that's why I went on record. That's why I stood up, and that's why I talked to the media about it. I can't speak for my colleagues. However, I think it's an important message that needs to go out, and hopefully they're listening to shows like this and to people like you when you send that message.
Well, not to argue, you know, with you or, you know, put you, like, any deeper on the spot, you know, and or turn you off to this process. But, you know, there has to be a point, like, where, and I understand what you're doing. But, you know, you have, I mean, you know, when you work at, and I'll say this right up front, you know, when you work at somewhere like Bank of America or some, you know, really horrible place like that that's doing wrong, illegal, bad stuff, ethically, you know, you have to absolutely stand up and you have to turn around and you have to say, look, you know, this is the organization that I work in, and this is your organization, and these people are completely, there are people suffering over this. And you know, to try and justify it saying, well, look, I'm doing the right thing, but nobody else is, I just don't think that floats anymore because, you know, we see with this shutdown is this suffering, and people are starting to suffer this week.
Well, and you know, I will also say as someone who was in the minority party my entire legislative career, mm-hmm. the importance of those no votes are really significant. When you know, because it and we have 90 people who are all duly elected, and they get to decide. The governor gets to make a case, but the governor doesn't have a vote in the legislative session. And so these are all people duly elected by their constituencies that now have to go back home and explain their vote.
And so, Joanne, one more thing I have to say. I think you've shown us what can be the outcome of somebody in this system is you've gotten out of it and you've used your powers for good instead of evil.
Well,
you are the superwoman, well, you know, or the super person.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. But I also think Jackie Dingfelder and Diane Rosenblum and a whole bunch of other good legislators, Lou Fredericks, Jules Bailey, you know, we have some good legislators throughout the state. The problem is we don't have a supermajority of legislators that do what's best for the people they represent. I think they do what's best for their reelection campaign, but well, that's my personal opinion.
Well, I'm gonna stop being the old admonishing man and get off the line. But you know what? I mean, you need to get your metaphoric paddles out, and you need to start. You know, like public people need to start realizing exactly what's going on.
That's right. That's,
you know, and I'd like to see that. And, you know, hey, all I can say is, honestly, good luck.
Well, you know, a lot more people are going to be a lot more educated real soon because between the federal government and the state government, a lot of people are going to be impacted by these decisions. So thank you so much for your call.
Take care, Joanne.
You too. And so, Senator, I want to also, so what's next? I mean, it was my assumption that this GMO bill could not get the votes to get it out of the regular session. Is that accurate?
It did pass the Senate, even though, as I mentioned, I voted no, but it did not move out of the House.
Uh-huh.
But there was no vote on the House. I don't know whether their votes were there or not, but obviously the Speaker didn't support it.
Right.
Otherwise, it would have moved forward.
We have mixed feelings. I am seeing from a variety of people. I saw that there was a quote from the Oregon Environmental Council that they look forward to working with the governor and the legislative body, Donny Antrim, to create the committee and help develop some model legislation. Is there a model legislation available?
Frankly, I haven't had a chance to even start looking into whether there's model legislation available or not, but certainly I'm sure there'll be folks that are looking to see if there's legislation around the country that's been passed. I mean, I can tell you there's going to be some heavy-duty lobbying to
yes.
Prevent this bill from moving forward, but obviously there's going to be an effort to try to draft this legislation and pass it in the 2015 session.
And so basically, I want to go back to the tax cut again for just a moment, because I think most people kind of glaze over when you start talking C-corps and S-corps and sole proprietorship. And so most people don't understand that basically what we've done is move a significant number of small businesses from paying from paying 9.9% in taxes to paying 7.6% in taxes. Is that accurate?
Correct. So what we've done is we've lowered the tax rate.
Right. So we've created a whole new tax rate just for this business class.
Correct. And as I mentioned, when I asked what was the justification, I heard something around 900 jobs. 900 jobs for $1 billion in tax cuts doesn't compute in my mind. I did not really hear what was the justification, behind it. And so that was one of the reasons that I was a no vote and concerned about it, concerned about the exponential growth of that. And unlike a tax credit that sunsets.
Right.
This is a change in the tax rate. So the legislature would have to come back in, and I want to make it very clear to the listeners that in order to change taxes, it's a supermajority vote. So
Of both houses. Right.
So in other words, it's a pretty high bar to come back in and change this.
And do we know how many businesses are impacted by this change?
There was an estimate, and again, it's an estimate, and it was in the thousands. But again, it's an estimate because we're not sure if businesses will change, will decide to change their status and elect that rate. So it's all based on certain assumptions and certain projections, and as we know, those projections could be higher or lower than what is expected.
And so I want to compare that to the, as the Republican caucus says, that they push for an expansion of the earned income tax credit to provide hardworking low-income Oregonians a little extra breathing room in their budget. And so we just talked about the breathing room we've just provided for small business owners and their taxes. Let's talk about the other end, which is that was a quote that I read from a press clip that was put out by the Republican caucus. Do you want to comment on the Republicans' efforts to expand the earned income tax credit?
Well, I was going to say, I think this was Senator Rosenbaum was one of the biggest champions, and I worked with her on this. We're part of the Hunger Relief Task force, and this has been an agenda item for the Hunger Relief Task Force for multiple sessions. So I'm not really sure where that quote came from. I didn't see it, but I can tell you that as part of the Hunger Relief Task Force, Senator Rosenbaum and I have been big proponents and pushing for this ever since we've been in the legislature, you know, for over a dozen years. So what the Earned Income Tax Credit will do is it will provide additional dollars in the pockets of low-income Oregonians. But I can tell you it's $25 million a biennium versus probably over $350 million.
25 versus 350 million. I just wanted to keep score.
I mean, you know, if you look at the overall, what adds up to what, I can tell you that we come out ahead initially, and then, like as I mentioned before, over time, it's a very, very small increase in the positive. So it's a trade-off initially. This next biennium, there will be more money for schools directly. There will be some more money for senior programs. In the long term, it may be a wash. And the question is, have we then transferred equity or how we pay for our services from one class to another?
Well, and I guess one of the things that frustrates me is the governor wasn't even willing to fight for his own corrections task force, public safety task force. The recommended changes that were proposed would have shifted us from this prison building, mass incarceration, to one of really reducing significantly the number of people we send to state prisons. He didn't even fight for that. He let that just kind of die on the vine. And so I'm trying to figure out where do the other state resources come from if he continues to have special sessions to give special tax breaks to special constituents.
I can't speak to that, Joanne. I mean, I totally agree with you. I think the public safety package was inadequate, and folks like myself and Senator Prezonsky were pushing for a more aggressive package. And as you know, that was shut down by the DAs, and there wasn't enough votes to pass that. So I think it's a good question because eventually. We need to think how we're going to fund our schools if we're continuing to fund the public safety system at the rate that it's growing. And I'm sure your listeners have heard this from you, but our public safety system, even though it's not the largest part of the state budget, it's the fastest growing part of our budget.
Right. And, of course, the last governor used it as an economic development opportunity. We're going to go back to the phone line. Hello, Eugene. Welcome to KBOO.
Thanks. I just want to thank you for doing this show. It's getting harder and harder to find out what goes on in Salem, and this show really helps, and thank you for that.
You're very welcome.
And thank you for all the Democrats, the representatives who had the courage to stand up against these things and vote against, I'm sure, the direction of the leadership of the party. My only question now is if this is the leadership of the Democratic Party's idea of a grand bargain, what do they think a bad deal looks like? I mean,
kind of sounds like Obama, right?
Well,
and his compromise.
I hate to draw comparisons, but a tax cut for people who make up to $250,000, doctors and lawyers, while you know everybody else is paying 9%.
Right.
And a ban on any local initiatives to try to protect organic farmers and stop GMOs. If this is really what they think a good deal is, then I don't know who they represent.
I can't argue with you there.
Well, I'm agreeing with you. So thanks again for your program.
Well, thank you. Appreciate your call.
Okay, bye.
503-231-8187 is the number to call if you want to join the conversation. It probably feels to Senator Jackie Dingfelder like she's on the hot seat, and it's not you because you voted right. But I think you are hearing the frustration from many Oregonians who've been following this legislative process. And so I don't want to leave people depressed, Senator. What should people do if people are unhappy with the outcome of this legislative session? What do you suggest they do?
Well, first of all, I would write to your legislator and find out how they voted, because I'm not going to assume who everyone, the listeners, legislators are and how they voted, but I think that's the first thing. And second,
and can't you find that online?
Yes, you can find that online. But I'm assuming all of your listeners know who your state reps and state senators are, and they've probably emailed them. But I would ask them directly how they voted and to explain their vote. I think that's probably one of the best ways, and hopefully mm-hmm. they will answer you. The other is to obviously write to the governor and express your opinion as well, and write letters to the editor. You know, mm-hmm. I'm amazed at how few people use the letters to the editor or posting online. A lot of people read those letters, and I think it's an important way to express your opinion. And obviously, we didn't have enough votes to stop this package, and those of us who stood up against it for the reasons that I articulated are disappointed that it went forward, and we'll certainly be trying to make sure that we hold our colleagues feet to the fire as far as what happens in the future, especially with the GMO bill, as you already pointed out, right. But as we monitor these tax breaks.
Well, and I want to remind people that we are in political season, and so there will be town halls, there will be coffees, there will be all kind of opportunities to engage with your current legislators, and I absolutely agree with the senator to ask them how they voted and why, you know, and then figure out whether or not those are the people that you want to support when they come around again seeking your endorsement for their campaigns. We're going to go back to the phone line. Hello, Joanne. Welcome to KBOO.
Yes, hello, Joanne.
Hello.
Senator and any good legislators or people that work for my daughter and her children and me, we're low income, et cetera, and more, et cetera. And thank you very much, and bless you all. And, you know, I want to cry, I want to yell, I want to scream because of my situation, but I'm paralyzed. And here's just a little what I need to move. I'm low income. My daughter and her children and I were alone in the world, and we called a lot of names in the Street Roots book, and the agencies don't get it. We're alone in the world, and we're low income, and I need to move. And anyway, I'm going to stop. And somebody said about suffering. I'm not being dramatic. I've been suffering since I was born. But anyway, Joanne Dolan, thanks for the program.
You're welcome. Have a good day, Joanne. You know, I think Joanne, Senator, is just one example of low-income people that are really freaked out about what's going on both at the federal level and what's happening at the local level. Are you currently hearing from your constituents about the federal shutdown and the impact that that's having on them locally?
Joanne, I'll be honest with you. The focus really has been on the special session. I received over 1,000 emails in the past few days about the special session. So not yet, but mm-hmm. I'm sure now that the special session's over, I'm assuming that the shift will begin. And yeah, I think that the fact that people are being held hostage is really unconscionable, and you know, there was comparisons made between the special session and Congress that were more functional.
I guess
sort of debatable, but I think that it's just a matter of time before we start hearing from veterans who can't get their benefits from, you know, people's food stamps. I mean, it is the potential impacts of the shutdown. You hear about the state parks, and I mean, you hear about the national parks. That's what makes the news. But it's every people's everyday lives that are going to be impacted by this. And I'm not sure that folks in Congress are aware of that. Of course, our delegation, I know, is working really hard to make sure that that we get government back open. And I did talk to one of our congresswoman who was really distraught about the whole thing, as I am.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that I was listening to the news this morning. They were talking about Head Start and how Head Starts are going to start closing down because they run out of money at the end of the month. And if they, the federal government stays shut down, there are going to be a whole lot of kids that aren't going to have any place to go in the morning, which is just one of the bazillion problems. I want to also ask you about CARE Oregon, but I'm going to go back to the phone line first. Hello, Sarah. Welcome to K-Book. Good morning. Hi, Sarah.
Good morning.
Hi, yes. Welcome.
Yes, thank you. I actually had a question. I had a question that had to do with the governor's, you know, the governor's push for more education funding, because I recall that the original budget that he released for the education funding was at $6.25 million, and then the legislator in the regular session was able to pass $6.75 million. So why all of a sudden does he want to increase educational funding? Can you talk about that more?
That's an excellent question. I will say that we, just to be fair, we did increase education funding over $1 billion. It is the biggest. I've been in the legislature 12 years, and for your listeners who don't know, when Joanne, formerly Joanne Bowman, now Joanne Hardesty, stepped down to run for another office, I actually stepped up to be the next state representative for the district, and I was appointed and then elected 5 times. I will tell you that this was the best education budget that we have adopted in the 12 years I've been in the legislature. And I'm sure your listeners know that part of the reason that we're in the situation we're in is because of Measure 5 and the shift of funding our schools from a more stable property tax to the income tax. So your question is spot on, because we did increase education funding. Is it enough? Not enough. However, did we need a special session specifically for that? That was part of the question that I raised, and you're absolutely right. I mean, part of this big push was to fund schools, but I'd say the biggest part of the special session push was for the PERS. The PERS bill.
Oh.
And the long term, the concern is about the unfunded liability of PERS in the long term and how that would affect not just schools, but also local governments and local municipal governments, special districts, a lot of the government agencies that provide services.
Well, it's interesting, since PERS and health care costs seem to be some of the biggest costs for public employees, you would think under health care reform, we all of a sudden costs would be shifting, would it not?
I think that's the hope, but, you know, that's yet to be determined. And that's probably, I'm assuming, you may want to have, by the way, folks from CARE Oregon
that's,
on your show.
Yes, that's on my list, but I figured I'd wait until the kinks were worked out, because
yeah.
I understand that there's some kinks.
But that you're right. One of the biggest cost drivers for not just the state, but local government as well, is and let's face it, for private private organizations and
right.
especially for small businesses,
right.
Is the 20% per year increases
in healthcare costs, right.
And, you know, I ask people, what in your life goes up 20% a year? And you just say, okay, sure.
Right.
I mean, you know, so that's one of the biggest cost drivers. And so certainly we are hoping with CARE Oregon and some of the healthcare reforms that will help drive down the cost. But I'm assuming, and I am not an expert on healthcare, Joanne, that's not my area of expertise,
right.
but that it's going to take a while before we see those changes.
Well, and yeah, that's definitely going to be a later and a longer conversation. And you're right. My plan is to, after we are done with our pledge drive, to bring folks on from CARE Oregon to talk specifically about how people access that service, because it officially goes into effect in January. But people are supposedly able to sign up as of October 1st. However, the computer has been... It's overrun, it appears. with people trying to sign up. So on one hand, that's probably a good thing, is that people are trying to sign up. Anything you want to share with the listening audience? Do you have a town hall coming up? Or
yes, we do, and I do have to jump off here, so I will close with saying thank you again for inviting me to be on the show, Joanne, and explain my position and a number of representatives, especially from the Portland area, that voted no on this special session package. And I do hope for your listeners, when you do look up your legislators' votes, please do make sure and contact them to find out what that was.
Yes.
Yes, we are having our next town hall, and I say we because Representative Alyssa Kinney-Geyer and Michael Denbrough and I, and it is around health care. It's scheduled for October 16th. I don't have the details yet, but if you can look on my Facebook page or on Representative Alyssa Kinney-Geyer's Facebook page, or if you are on our email list, or you could just email my office and we'll get you that information. So that's going to be, I think, the big focus is, as you said, with Cover Oregon, explaining to people what the options are and making sure that people have access and their questions answered. And so the focus is really going to be this next town hall is on health care, health coverage. And I do believe we've invited the head of the Oregon Health Authority, Dr. Bruce Goldberg. And I'm not sure we have confirmation on that yet, but I think it's going to be a really interesting and hopefully informative town hall. So appreciate listeners' time. Thank you so much for inviting me on the show, Joanne. And
thank you.
Talk to you again soon.
And again, thank you for your vote. Thank you for your leadership. And I certainly appreciate you voting based on reading bills and understanding your constituents. So have a great day and get a little bit of rest from your special session.
Thanks, Joanne.
Thank you.
Care. Bye-bye.
Bye now. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. And so I've been looking online, and I see that you can, in fact, go to Oregon legislative webpage and pull up each bill and see specifically how legislators voted on those individual bills. And as both Senator Dingfelder and I said earlier, there were very few no votes on this legislation. It was interesting that the GMO bill had 32 votes in the House. And as she said, there were only, I think she said, two or three Democrats that voted for that bill. But nevertheless, those bills passed, and the governor plans to sign those bills. So if you want to, again, join the conversation, give me a call at 503-231-8187. In the little bit of time we've got left, I'm going to kind of shift focus into the federal government, because the federal government is shut down, as we've been hearing about all week. And it's kind of ironic to think that not only is the federal government shut down, but it's really shut down based on this premise that you can hold the country hostage until you get your way. And what's interesting is that the Affordable Care Act has been passed by both houses of Congress. It's been signed by the president. It's been upheld by this U.S. Supreme Court. And it is starting to be implemented around the country. That's law. It's the law of the land. It's not going to change unless there is some congressional action for that to change. And so the fact that our Congress people who have created this mess are still getting paid while their staff have been furloughed. So they get to go home and sit and wait for our elected leaders to take some action. And so what are we doing as the people who supposedly sent these people to Congress to actually do a job? What are we doing? Are we writing our congressional delegation and telling them that this is unacceptable and that they need to figure out how they're going to donate their salary every day that the federal government is shut down? They need to be donating it to some local charity that will be picking up the slack For those people who will be at a head start, those people who won't be getting flu shots, so they'll end up in the emergency room, et cetera, et cetera. My understanding is there are about 22 states who've opted out of the Affordable Care Act. You won't be surprised to know that most of those states are in the South, but you might be surprised to know that most of those states have the highest poverty levels across the country. And so poor, rural, primarily people of color are the people that once again will be left out of the of healthcare reform already from the beginning. And what we're doing now with the federal government shutdown is just making it really impossible for the people, for the states that want to implement healthcare reform to actually move that forward. And that's the plan. But what's frustrating is that there's not more outrage. There's not more outrage from the public that we're allowing these overly paid politicians to draw a line in the sand, in an imaginary sand pile, I should say, because the, as I said, the Affordable Care Act is law, and it is being implemented in the states that actually want to help people get more insurance, and in the states that don't, they are doing everything they can possibly to try to stop it. But I think we as the public should be writing our congressional delegation. We should be making phone calls. We should be writing letters to the editor. We should be making sure that our voices are heard and that our elected representatives hear from us about making sure that the federal government moves forward, that making sure that the debt ceiling is lifted, as it has been done over and over and over again. The last time the federal government was shut down, I understand it was shut down for about 3 weeks. My understanding is if it is shut down now, even for that period of time, say 3 weeks, it could have detrimental impacts that are going to impact the most vulnerable people in our community well over the next year or so. And of course, we don't know what it will do to the world economy since the dollar is pretty weak already. It's going to devalue the dollar on the world market. And so that's not going to be good for anybody except, of course, the wealthiest people who can take their money and turn it into something else. And so even though you may not feel the impact today, you can be assured that the longer the federal government continues to be shut down, the more the impact is going to be felt. And I want to tie this back to what happened at the state level, because we have the state legislative body patting themselves on the back by saying that they're not gridlocked like Congress. Well, I'd rather they would be gridlocked rather than passing really poor legislation that only benefits a small, small segment of our population as compared to passing legislation that really benefits working people, low-income people, seniors, and everyone else. It looks like we have a caller on the line. Hello, Steve. Welcome to KBOO.
Hi, Joanne.
Hi.
You know, I've had some problems with the leadership of the Democratic Party.
But me too.
As regards this issue with the shutdown and maybe not even raising the debt limit,
right?
The problem is the Republicans. You know, so I mean, I wouldn't call up Blumenauer and Schrader and DeFazio and get on their case about this because they're trying to do the right thing in these cases.
Well, I mean, I agree with you. I think in this particular case, you're absolutely right. It is the Republican leadership that has drawn this line in the sand. But it's not that the Democrats are blameless in this process, right?
I think the Democrats, if we're up to the Democrats, actually, you know, if Boehner held a vote on a clean CR, even about 100 Republicans would vote for that, and the government would not be shut down. But Boehner's not willing to do that, because his position is threatened by his own caucus if he holds that vote. But the Democrats want to keep the government open. It's definitely not the Democrats in this case.
Well, but my frustration with the Democrats is really around the Affordable Care Act as well, right? So I'm still a bit annoyed that we have pretend insurance that we're going to get we're going to be forced to pay for in January. Some people will benefit But I'm really concerned about this influx of millions of people who think they will be able to see a doctor, and they're going to be woefully surprised when they find out that the healthcare industry cannot absorb all the new people that are coming in.
Well, we'll see how that goes.
Yeah, well, it's coming.
The poor people really won't be covered, like they talked about on Democracy Now, is because all those state governors and their state legislatures,
right,
controlled by Republicans, would not accept the Medicaid expansion.
That's right, expansion, right, right. So we got 22 states with
26,
with the with a high number of people living in poverty. So the people that are supposed to benefit, right, from the Affordable Care Act.
Well, that's Republicans again.
Well,
you know, I called Wald's office this morning. I got on their case. You know, I was nice about it. But
well,
that's the closest Republican I could think to call.
Well, I mean, so. I think that's true. I mean, but, the blame is, there's enough blame on the dysfunction of Congress to really go to both parties. But I do agree with you. In this particular case, the government shutdown is directly at the feet of the Republican leadership in Congress. I totally agree.
Okay.
Thanks. Bye. Okay. Have another caller on the line?
Yeah.
Hello, Sheila. Welcome to KBOO.
Thank you, Joanne. Hey, I really appreciate all the stuff you do. I love to listen to your show.
Oh, thank you so much.
My comment, we have what we call representatives.
Yes.
But who the devil are they representing? We elect them to represent us, mm-hmm. but they don't. We want things to go on. We want things to happen in our government, in our country, and they oppose everything. Well, not everything, I'm exaggerating, but they oppose so much of what we want to do, which means they are not representing us.
Right. That's right. That's right.
And it's just driving me nuts. And people reelect them when they're not being represented by these people.
I tell you, we reelected Ron Wyden, Senator Ron Wyden, and he lives in New Jersey. It fascinates me that we elect people because we know their names.
I can't. He lives in New Jersey.
Yeah, that's where his wife and his twin daughters live.
Oh, for God's sake.
He probably has a P.O. box or an apartment or maybe even a house in Portland, but he lives in Jersey.
Okay. That sounds like Romney when he was living in his son's basement.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
I mean, but you're right. I mean, what is it going to take to change that? Because it's not like, you know, it's like when we were celebrating the 50th anniversary of the March on Washington, and I started saying the big issues were healthcare, housing, police brutality, economic opportunity, education, and guess what? 50 years later, those are exactly the same issues.
Yeah.
And yet we keep keep electing progressive politicians, but we're in the same boat.
Well, the problem is, one of the problems I see is what they call lobbying. I call it bribery and graft, which are felonies.
Yes.
And they call it lobbying. They clean up the word. It's newspeak.
That's right. Right. And so when we get prepared for elections and then the opposition has $1 million in the bank ready for their reelection campaign, how is a regular person supposed to compete with that?
That's right.
Well, but we got to fix it.
Let me say my speak.
Thank you so much for your call. We are running out of time. You have a great day.
You too. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye now. It has been a pleasure to be back with you again next week. Greg Palast will be on. It will be the beginning of KBOO's pledge drive for the fall. And we're so excited to have Greg. And we will be back next week, same time, same place, same station. Have a great day.
Get up, stand up, stand up for your right. Get up, stand up, stand up for your right. Get up, stand up, stand up for your right. Get up, stand up, don't give up the fight.
Preacher man, oh. don't give up the fight.
Most people think great God will come from the sky, take away everything and make everybody feel high. But if you know what life is worth.
Hey, good morning. You are listening to KBOO Portland. It is 9 o'clock on your Thursday morning. Coming up in a half hour today, Per Fogering hosts Fight the Empire with guest host Kurt Liebesit. They'll speak with Nicole Faust, co-author of The Automatic Earth, chronicling and interpreting an ongoing credit crunch as the most pressing aspect of our current financial state. At 10 o'clock today, hear Air Cascadia with headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. At 10:15 on Flashpoints, host Dennis Bernstein speaks with author, journalist, and blogger Max Blumenthal about his latest book, Goliath, Life and Loathing in Greater Israel. At 11 today on Between the Covers, host David Naiman interviews novelist Jonathan Lethem about his new novel, Dissident Gardens, in which considers what happened to the real American Communist Party after its Depression-era heyday. And at 11:30 on Black Book Talk, the topic is My Life in the Negro Leagues, the autobiography of Wilmer Fields. That is all coming up this morning on The Mighty Boo. Stick around. Teresa Mitchell is up next with Press Watch, the news you're not supposed to know.
In response to requests from listeners, KBOO will make a program change at 4 p.m. each weekday. Starting on Monday, October 7th, we will air The Tom Hartman Show from 4 to 5 p.m. on a trial basis for 3 months. We are interested in your responses to this change. Please call 503-231-8032 to express your opinion or email program@kboo.org. You can continue to hear Democracy Now! On KBOO each morning at 7 a.m.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant